It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio, and happy Thanksgiving weekend to all of you listening. I hope you enjoy this morning's show. I'm going to talk a little bit about weather, and certainly, and I don't mean the kind of weather that you turn on your television and listen to a reporter talk about. I'm going to talk about being out in the weather and those epic times when, particularly in fall, Mother Nature begins to hurtle winter at us, and whether it's deer or turkey or ducks or geese or quail or pheasants, they know the onrush of winter is coming, and they pick up a frenetic pace. And last Saturday the 21st of November, was one of those days when the radar screens across America, across the heartland, became jammed with migrating, millions of migrating ducks and geese and swans and sandhill cranes and birds just moving south en masse. And we saw that last Saturday, the 21st. And if you were outside, whether you were trying to sit in a deer stand in the driving snow of northern Illinois or the rain of southwestern Illinois or in Wisconsin, the near blizzard conditions, you know what it's like to be out when everything happens with the onrush of winter. And I had last Saturday afternoon one of those experiences that will long live with me, and I think if you were outside, you certainly know what I'm talking about. It was my sort of annual daddy-daughter hunt when I take my daughter duck hunting. She's home from college, and it's something that I look forward to. And we were out Saturday afternoon. The rain, snow had stopped, but the wind was howling a full 40-mile-an-hour blow out of the west, and ducks were on the move literally by the thousands, and we're sitting in this makeshift blind in knee-deep water. Yes, I make my daughter put on waders and sit in the water with me. And overhead, we watch swans. Think about this. In Illinois, we watch swans go overhead. We watch thousands of snow geese pass. It was an endless stream of ducks moving down the Kaskaskia River. That doesn't mean that they were decoying. They were coming in. It means that we saw them. We saw sandhill cranes, everything moving and fighting the wind. And occasionally, we got a shot off, but that wasn't the point. The point was, for that three-hour period in front of us and overhead, we watched the Grand Passage take place. Sunday morning, we got up, and it was a solid 14 degrees in the thermometer, and the water where the afternoon before, the waves, even in 6-inch water that had been almost whitecaps, now was as placid and still as it can get because it was all frozen. We went from 40-mile-an-hour winds to no winds, and from water and birds in the air to the onset of winter. Of course, now here we are a week later, and we're back almost, it seems like, with, well, early fall or late spring temperatures, nearly 60 degrees. In fact, it is in the 60s in parts of the state. But for that one moment, that one day, Mother Nature roared. And what a time to be outside and to watch that. You can plan all the hunting trips you want, but to actually be there on the day when it happens is something that you never forget. And it happened last Saturday, and if you were on the Mississippi or in the Illinois or wherever you were listening to this show on WGN, literally from one mountain range to the next, the birds moved, the radar screens got scrambled. It was the Grand Passage. And in some ways, it was very much like what occurred in the Armistice Day storm nearly 70 years ago when over 100 hunters were trapped on the Mississippi River and died in one of the most violent snowstorms and cold fronts ever to come along. Last week's was very similar. The only difference is, of course, now we have not only modern technology to warn us about these kind of events, we also have modern technology to be able to communicate. If you think about the Armistice Day storm, and someday I ought to really do a show on the Armistice Day storm, because it was the single greatest tragedy for duck hunters and in the history of America when it occurred, and we lost over 100 duck hunters on the Mississippi River alone in Wisconsin and Iowa. Today we got cell phones, all kinds of ways to communicate. You wouldn't be trapped on an island because you have a cell phone. You might be trapped, but help come and get you. We didn't have that kind of forecasting, but we had the forecast that said last Saturday was going to be one of those days when the wind was going to drive, snow was going to pile up, and the birds were going to fly, and they did. Of course, the forecasters didn't say the birds were going to fly. Those of us who hunt knew the birds were going to fly. It was quite a day, and what a day to be with my daughter. And for any of us who take kids into the outdoors, we remember those special times. Some are more special than others. Last Saturday with the weather, made it among the most special, memorable days one could have. Moving from the big blow and birds and swans and everything moving south, I guess I'm going to talk for just a moment about another set of hot air. That was cold air. This is hot air coming from my favorite conservation organization, said tongue-in-cheek, Sierra Club, which warns senators to back the EPA climate rule. For many of you listening, particularly those of you listening in farm country, you know that the Clean Power Plan, as it's called, what a great name, the Clean Power Plan, is designed to reduce the emissions coming from coal-fired power plants. Well, that's terrific. I think everybody wants to reduce the amount of pollution. I'm always advocating for cleaning up our air, cleaning up our water, but I'm also always saying we ought to do it in the context of what's the cost, what's the gain, and while we want to always move the ball forward, if you will, we don't want to do so at the extent of causing huge hardships or disruptions. We can do this in a way that is thoughtful. The Clean Power Plan is not thoughtful, but the Sierra Club wants to hire a pollster, which they did. And admittedly, the pollster says it's a left-leaning firm. It's called the Public Policy Polling Center. And their poll, not surprisingly, found that an overwhelming majority, and I quote, an overwhelming majority support the plan in Maine, Missouri, Illinois, Ohio, and Virginia to clean up the air. Isn't that wonderful? I'm sure they overwhelmingly support it, but they're turning it into, instead of a policy question of how do we do this, they're turning it into a political question, and specifically, this is not partisan, specifically the Sierra Club is after Senators Blunt of Missouri, Kirk of Illinois, Portman of Ohio, and Grassley of Iowa to vote with the EPA as a result of the current administration to have the Clean Power Plan passed. Clean Power Plan is good on paper in a way. It's extremely costly. It does not take into account a number of other factors that could be utilized to have us work on cleaning up our air without the really great cost in the terms of commerce and jobs. Of course, we all want a clean environment, but it's a question of how we get there. So the Sierra Club, once again, does not look at things objectively, and I'm not picking on the Sierra Club. I think it's just a fact. The Sierra Club is very seldom for something. They're almost always against something unless it's for more regulations. You don't find the Sierra Club out championing more habitat. You don't find them out championing better science very often, but you certainly always find them championing greater regulation and greater restrictions at environmental and economic costs. So anyway, I'll be back in just a moment with more on the Great Outdoor Show. And when I come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about an interesting development with the Chinook salmon in the state of Wisconsin and the Great Lakes, and a few more issues as we move into the heart of the last political season before Christmas break. And we head into the new year. You're listening to Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN, and first a message from your Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
It's a winter wonderland, and it's your playground if you have the right equipment. Well, the 2015 Chevy Silverado is the key to a winter full of activity. With 12,000 pounds of towing capacity, Silverado can tow your snowmobiles anywhere you want to go. Hunting, ice fishing, Silverado gets 24 miles per gallon on the highway. And if you're hunting for a new truck, there's never been a better time to see your local Chevy dealer. They have leasing experts who can get you more Chevy for less money with a big fixed lease. Chevy Silverado is the first and only pickup to offer 4G LTE Wi-Fi that keeps you connected on the go. It's the longest lasting, most dependable pickup on the road, and that makes it the best choice you can make for off the road. Throw in a 2-year, 24,000 mile free schedule maintenance, and you've got yourself an all-American camping partnership made in heaven. Ask about the big fix lease at your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer, or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for all the details. Track it down. And oh, by the way, there's no limit.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio, and hope you're enjoying the show. I'm going to switch gears now a little bit, and I'm going to talk about actually a very promising, not that things I don't talk about are optimistic, but a very promising development, and that is the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, as well as all the states in the Great Lakes, were concerned with the declining Chinook salmon population that there might not be enough returning salmon, hen salmon, Chinooks, to have eggs that would, in fact, be able to be used in hatcheries to repopulate the Great Lakes with Chinook salmon next year. The good news is, while the 2015 spawning run was later than usual and the fish numbers were very much down as was expected, enough salmon came in Sturgeon Bay to meet the goal of 1.5 million eggs that were needed to be collected to produce about 800,000 salmon, Chinook salmon, to be stocked in the Great Lakes in the next spring. Also, in the Root River Steelhead facility near Racine, 450 eggs are going to be brought in. So, and 100,000 of those will be provided to the state of Illinois. So, a year in which people were really fearful we might not have enough eggs to replenish the restocking programs, it looks like that we did succeed. As I discussed a few weeks ago, the salmon populations at Lake Michigan have been declining. Their growth rates are declining. The alewife, their primary, the reason they are brought into the Great Lakes, and their primary food source is being absolutely, well, it's been more than decimated. Now it's nearly being wiped out. And that was a good thing. If you were in Chicago in the 1960s and 70s, you certainly remember the stench and the fouling of the beaches. Now we look at Oak Street Beach and all the beaches in Chicago, and we see all the volleyball nets, and we see people swimming, and we see people sunbathing, and even some people trying to surf. And in the 60s and 70s, you couldn't go near those beaches in the summer. The stench from the alewives being washed up made the city of Chicago stink. Milwaukee stunk. The entire lakefront from up around Sturgeon Bay all the way down through Gary and all the way over in Indiana, the lakefront was one stinking mess of hundreds of millions of dead alewives that were washing up. So the reason salmon came into the Great Lakes was to control the alewife population, first and foremost. The fact that they would develop into a great sport fishing resource was hoped for, but the reason the governors got behind this very expensive program was because we had no way to get rid of the stench, and the only way to do it was to bring fish in that would eat the alewives. And the salmon have done a great job. You hardly ever see a dead alewife washing up on the beach. You certainly don't smell them anymore. And I can remember, I'm sure many of you listening can remember, when the Chicago Park District would go down to the beaches and with snow plows push the alewives up into piles and then haul them away just so you could go to the beach. In the 1960s and 70s, not that many people went to the beach. Look at the beaches now, all the way down Lake Michigan, populated. Look at Illinois Beach State Park, which in the 60s and 70s, which wouldn't go near. Now it's got over a million people visiting it a year, enjoying the beach. Those are the kinds of things that happen when you put science to work to help advance a resource. And in this case, bringing the salmon in was a tremendous economic boon, just an incredible economic boom to the Great Lakes, and it solved a big ecological problem. So that's the news. We still have enough salmon to supply more eggs to keep the salmon population going, but I'm not sure where this is all headed. 10 years from now or so, if we have the reduction in salmon that we've had over the past decade, we probably won't be fishing for salmon on Lake Michigan. Speaking of Lake Michigan for one more moment before we're out of time for the day, the National Oceanic Organization, the National Marine Sanctuaries Act, which formed NOAA, is asking for public input on protecting more of Lake Michigan as a maritime heritage area. And Lake Michigan is 875 square miles, believe it or not, it's a pretty big size, with waters that would enable parts of it to become historic monuments where shipwrecks of national significance took place. According to the Marine Sanctuaries Act, the area that now is going to be put into a sanctuary, which goes from Fort Washington to Two Rivers in Wisconsin, would have 39 known shipwrecks in it, 15 of which are listed on the National Register of Historic Places. Think about that for a second. A boat goes down to the bottom of the Great Lakes over 100 years ago, and now it's listed in the National Register of Historic Places. 14 of the shipwrecks are essentially intact, and three vessels still have their masts standing. which is a rarity in the Great Lakes. These went down mostly in storms in the winter, winds of Kitchigumi, as it's known. And two of the oldest shipwrecks that are in the Great Lakes are in Wisconsin. They all would now be protected in this new marine sanctuary called the National Marine Sanctuaries Act. Public comment goes on through the end of December regarding this, and I guess it'll pass because very seldom does, once this thing gets started, does the public overturn them. I don't think it will impact the fishing in those areas. I don't really know what it means in entirety other than we're going to create a refuge, basically a museum area, which would say you cannot go down and dive into those shipwrecks and take things out. I'm not sure what good that does. If you really think about it, these things are in 50, 60, several hundred feet of water. No one's ever going to see them. They're decomposing, even though they've been there a long time. They are eventually going to go away in the bottom of the lake, but now we're not going to be allowed to go down, and I guess we can go down and look at them, but you can't take anything. So anyway, more government stuff. Not necessarily good, not necessarily bad, just more government stuff. And with that, we're out of time for this morning. I thank you so much for listening to The Great Outdoors Show. We'll be back next Sunday morning with much more on The Great Outdoors. It's the last week of the gun deer season in Illinois. Go out and enjoy it. This is Charlie Potter, I'm the host of The Great Outdoors Show in Chicago and America, 720 WGN.